Hi, this is Richard Epcar. You're listening to the Fandom Podcast Network.
People assume that time is a strict progression of cause to effect, but actually, from a non-linear, non-subjective viewpoint, it's more like a big ball of wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey.
From days of long ago, from uncharted regions of the universe, comes a legend.
Tell me, Doctor, where are we going?
Network proudly presents the Fandom Flashback.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious.
Hey everybody, it's Kyle, and we're here for the second episode of the Fandom Flashback, and we've got something very special planned for this episode, but I can't do it alone, and I'm thankful enough to be joined by my friend from the land down under, Mr. Alan R. Ryan. Alan, welcome back to the Fandom Flashback.
G'day, mate. How you going?
Doing good, and I am very excited for the opportunity we're about to have.
As am I.
So, without further ado, it is my honor to introduce a man who, if you are familiar with video games, anime, anything that involves voice acting, you have heard this man's voice, I promise you. In my mind, he is a legend, and it's my personal pleasure to welcome Mr. Richard Epcar here to the Fandom Podcast Network.
Hi, guys. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Now, Richard, You've done so much in voice acting. I mean, people know you from so many things, whether it's being Bateau in Ghost in the Shell, your work back in the day with Robotech, when you did Macross Plus, and even more recently, you've been doing a lot of stuff, I've noticed, with DC. You voiced the Joker in the Injustice video games.
Yes. Well, I've done the Joker in several games, actually. In Injustice, Gods Among Us, I'm the Joker in that. I'm in the Joker in Infinite Crisis, which was another game. I was in the Joker in Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe. So I've been doing him for a while, and I'm doing him again in another game, but I can't talk about that, unfortunately. But hopefully that'll be out soon, and we'll know about that. But yeah, I've also co-directed Arkham Origins and played three characters in that, and I'm the voice of Commissioner Gordon in Batman Unlimited, which is a new animated film series. So we've done three of them so far, and I'm also Solomon Grundy in the DC DC Kids or whatever it is they have a thing where they do, and I play Solomon Grundy in that. So I'm all over that. DC Super Friends League versus Legion is the name of it, and I play Solomon Grundy in that. So I'm all over that that DC universe,
which I imagine has got to be a lot of fun with such rich characters like that.
It is great. You know, I've always been a Batman fan. Even when I was a kid, I used to read the comics and everything. And I actually Ellen, my wife, Ellen Stern. And I were one day we were editing our videos for our on-camera stuff, and who happened to be there but Bob Kane himself. So I got to meet Bob Kane, the creator of Batman, and talk to him for a little bit. That was many years ago, but it was really kind of cool. And then another weird coincidence, Ellen and I used to produce an actor showcase at the Debbie Reynolds Studio in Hollywood, and one of the guy who happened to be working there as a janitor was Lou Wilson, who was the first Batman on film. And I got to meet him and hang out with him and become friends with him. And his son is the producer of the Bond films. So it's kind of interesting, 6 degrees. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Well, you bring up the Bond films, and my cohort over here tells me that you are an absolutely huge James Bond fan.
Yes, I am. I am a huge, huge James Bond fan. I have been since I was a little kid, and I've always loved the Bond films. And in fact, if you could see my office, I have several one sheets from the movies up on the walls. I have a lot of the figures on my bookshelves, including a lot of my own figures. I've got the Joker and Jigen and Bateau and just a bunch of characters that I've done. It's kind of fun, but I've got a lot of the Bond stuff too. So, and Raiden's up there. But yeah, it's been fun, and it's, you know, it's something that I appreciate so much when the fans, you know, approach me about certain shows that they're really tuned into. I can really appreciate it because I have that same, you know, feeling for the Bond movies.
Well,
so going back, you were younger, was that something that you grew up with as, you know, a teenager? Was that your sense of fandom was, you know, going through the early Sean Connery films?
Yeah, I think so. You know, in my case, you know, what happened was when I was 15, my mom passed away, and I was really kind of, screwed up from that, or, you know, real sad about the whole thing. And my sister took me to see Goldfinger. And that was the first time I'd ever seen a Bond movie, and I was just blown away by it. And I just, I thought, I either want to be a secret agent or an actor, but I thought I'm too tall to be a secret agent because they would shoot me in 2 seconds. And so I decided to be an actor, and I just really got into it. And I started, I didn't realize when I saw Goldfinger that there was these two other movies, Dr. No and From Russia with Love, which they had already, you know, showed. And so I would seek them out, and then I would go and see the other ones. And then as they were coming out, you know, my buddies and I, we would all go to the, you know, the first day, and we'd go downtown and take the bus there and be the first in line to go see it. And when I used to go see movies as a kid, it was really kind of cool because I grew up in Denver, and they had these old opera houses that they renovated into movie theaters. And the movie companies would bring a lot of the props from the movie. So when we saw Thunderball, they had all, you know, they had mannequins in the wetsuits with the spear guns. And, you know, when I saw, you know, other movies, they would have the DB5, the Aston Martin in the lobby of the theater. So it was really kind of an event, you know, to go see these things. And it was really exciting, you know, to see these, especially I think as a kid, you just kind of really get into that world. You know, it's like being taken to another adventure, like a lot of the kids do with the games today.
That's amazing. So let me ask you this, because Bond has so much changed over the years to where we have the current incarnation with Daniel Craig, which looks like it's wrapping up and we're moving on to a new Bond. What was the big rumor is that possibly Tom Hiddleston as the new Bond. What is your feeling on that?
You know what? I'm sure he'll be good. I'm not sure that he looks like Bond to me, to be honest with you, but I wasn't sure Daniel Craig looked like Bond either. But, you know, he turned out to be, I think, a pretty good Bond in the end. He certainly was a tough as nails Bond. And I kind of like that because they had gotten kind of goofy and corny towards the end of, Roger Moore's run and some of the other things. They just got a little, even with Pierce towards the end, they just got a little too out there, you know, and ridiculous. And I kind of liked that they reeled it back in and made it a little more, you know, gritty and dangerous and that whole thing. And so I hope they kind of continue along those lines. But, the one thing that I do kind of miss from the old Bonds is his sense of humor and his style and his sophistication and all that sort of thing, that the things that I think that kind of make Bond Bond. Otherwise, you're just kind of watching an English born movie. You know what I mean?
No,
we're missing the.
Go ahead.
The
Adam.
Gadget. Got to have the gadgets. I mean, that's one thing that I missed about the last probably three films was I knew in Casino Royale. Obviously, it's like a beginning for Bond.
You know, a reboot. He's just,
reboot. Yeah, but to me, like the second film, it's a little bit like, I suppose, From Russia with Love. Let's get Q in there. Let's get him the DB5 with the parachute seats and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like Batman. You can't have Batman without the Batmobile.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. It's. I did miss a little bit of that stuff, and I think that they were trying for a little something a little different, and but you know, listen, nothing lasts this long if people don't really love the original, you know, in vision of this character. And I think that, you know, I think a lot of people really, you know, love Bond, and And I think we'd like to see the return of Bond, you know, the kind of, the, you know, the character that he was in the past. So I don't know. We'll see. You know, Tom's a good actor. I just watched him in this thing that he just did. Trying to remember.
Night Manager.
Night Manager. Thank you. Yes. Night Manager. And I thought that was a really good miniseries. And I thought he did an excellent job. He seems a little light to me, to be honest with you. You know, it's like, you know, when you see Sean in action, you know, he can take care of himself and get through whatever situation he has to get through. I'm not so sure about this guy, but I don't know. You know, I've replaced a lot of people in shows. I've replaced, I've gone in and done the Joker when somebody else was doing him for a long time and was very beloved. I went in and did Ansem and Kingdom Hearts when somebody else did the original one and was very beloved. So I completely understand, that thing from the fan base where they kind of don't like it when you switch, you know, actors out, and I completely understand it. But, and so because of that, I want to give everybody a chance, you know, I'm sure. And, you know, listen, even though Sean Connery to me is James Bond, has done the best job of all of them, I still like all of them. I still think they've all brought something unique of themselves to the role and that they've done a nice job. So, you know, and I still watch all of the movies. So, I'm sure he'll rise to the occasion, and I'm sure he'll do a good job if that's who they choose.
Absolutely. Now, the other thing I want to talk about is you have a new movie out coming out here very soon.
I do actually. It's a really campy, crazy movie called Broken Spirits, and I play a shady shaman in it. And I'm kind of, I don't know if you call me the comic relief. I guess I am kind of the comic relief in a way. It's kind of a fun adventure thriller kind of a thing along the lines of a movie that Bruce Campbell used to do, like back in the day when he was kind of starting out, and all those crazy
Evil Dead.
Evil Dead, or yeah, what was the other one he did? Army of Darkness, you know, that kind of stuff. When he, you know, it's kind of in that vein, you know, it's just kind of a really, fun, campy romp. That's just kind of a, you know, sci-fi kind of a thing. And it's really kind of an interesting, movie. And we had a lot of fun filming it. We were out in the desert and it was like 150 degrees out there and the sand was blowing in our eyes. And, it was unbelievable, but, we just had a screening of it a couple of nights ago, and it looks pretty good. It's a fun movie. You know, it's you just have to realize it's kind of a silly movie, but don't go there expecting Gone with the Wind or anything like that. But it's good. You know, it's fun and it's entertaining, I think. And I think people will like it. There's a lot of voice actors in there. Vic Mignogna's in it. Spike Spencer's in it. Kyle Ebert has a little cameo. Christina V is in it. So we have some people from the voiceover community that are playing parts in it. And I think for what it is, it turned out pretty good.
Well, I've met Vic on several occasions. So if you have him out in the desert, I know there's got to be craziness involved with that.
Well, I think he actually, his whole thing was shot in a day. So I didn't see much of him out there, but I run into Vic all the time at conventions and stuff like that. But it was a really fun shoot. We had a good time, and we've been waiting for a long time. The guy who was the director of the film was editing the movie, and he was about 90% of it, you know, the way done with the editing. And then he had a bad heart attack. And, so that kind of put the film on the back burner for a while. And so it's literally been 5 years since we filmed this thing, and we finally got to see it. And, the star of the film, Steve Weiss, took the movie and basically finished it. And, so we were all happy about that and we got to see it. And like I say, it's kind of fun. And I really enjoy this character that I play. He's really a fun character. I'd love to reprise him again at some point.
That's amazing. When do we know when that's due out?
I know that they're talking now to distributors and they're trying to get it out. I know there's also three conventions, and I don't know which ones they are because Steve's kind of handling all that. But there's three conventions that are very interested in having screenings and having a few of us actors out there to do panels and stuff and show the movie and then have like a, you know, a panel afterwards. So, you know, that would be a lot of fun. I would love to do something like that. So we'll see what happens, you know.
Good. Now, Richard, the next thing I wanted to ask you is, I know through, especially I'm going to say the last 25 years, voice acting has just taken such a change and become so big.
Yeah.
And you've been there through a lot of it. What has it been like for you going through this change? Like when we had the huge anime explosion in the 90s, and just how much respect voice acting work is getting these days in the general public?
Well, you know, it is and it isn't. I mean, you know, there are those of us who, you know, are fortunate to work consistently and be busy doing stuff. And, you know, it's been great. I mean, Ellen and I got in it at the right time. We got in it, you know, the 70s and 80s. And we happened to hook into a lot of cool shows like Robotech, for example. We did Robotech in the 80s. And we never thought much of it, to tell you the truth. We thought, oh, you know, because we were on camera actors, and we said, oh, we'll just do these, you know, these voice jobs to kind of fill in the gaps, you know, and pay some bills. And it turned out that this is, you know, turned out to be the big part of my career, really, is the voice work. So it turned out to be a good thing. It kind of got me in there at a good time, because it's so competitive and so crazy. And there's so many people that want to do this work that it's gotten insane. And whereas there used to be maybe, you know, 15, 20 people auditioning for a part, sometimes you have thousands of people auditioning for a part. So it's gotten really crazy. And anytime I can book a job, you know, and especially something iconic like the Joker or Raiden or something like that, I feel very, very blessed and happy to be, you know, in that world where I can, you know, do some of these bigger characters and some of these bigger projects. So it's, you know, it's, and it has changed. It's, you know, basically what's changed it is the internet. And, you know, like I say, there used to be like you'd have 15, 20 people would maybe show up for an audition or whatever. Now everybody just records at home and they send in their auditions. And one of the games I directed was Blue Dragon, which I did for Microsoft. And they basically said, yeah, let's hear everybody. So I had to basically cull through literally thousands and thousands of auditions for every role. It was ridiculous. So, and bring in the best two or three, you know, voices for each character. And that was just insane. So that's kind of what's happening with it right now.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting to me is to the history that you've obviously had with voice work, going right back to when, as you mentioned, when you and Ellen got involved, you know, working on film as well at the same time. What I find is interesting is that the story that you told me about how Robotech came together is just as interesting as watching the show. The hard work, I think, that, you know, all of you, Carl, all the way down through the cast, did put this massive saga together. I think people don't appreciate just the time crunch you had and, you know, the fact that you guys were literally working 24/7 to get this thing together.
Yeah, it was crazy. We, you know, at the time, Robotech was just considered, oh, some, you know, some Japanese animation show, and so we were basically relegated to the night shift. And, you know, sometimes we'd go in 2-3 o'clock in the morning to record stuff. It was kind of ridiculous. And you know, at the time we just had a little baby, our son was born, Jonathan, and he'd come with us, and he would, you know, he'd sleep on the, you know, in the couch or whatever. And we'd, you know, I'd go in one studio and Ellen would stay with him, or, you know, or she would go in another studio, I'd stay with her. Or if we both had to be in one of the studios, somebody from the cast would sit with him. And so we were running up and down the stairs. There was three studios. We'd go up and down the stairs and go into each studio and do, you know, our voice, our character's voice in different episodes. You know, and the thing that people, a lot of people don't realize, and, you know, Carl was a good salesman. And he kind of went in and sold, I can't remember which it was. I think it was KTTV, which was one of the networks out here. He sold the series to them, but he didn't have enough product to fill the contract. They needed, I guess they needed 26 episodes to make a season or something like that. I'm not really sure on all of these details, but he basically he had to get three series from Japan, because the one series he was going to use, there wasn't enough material. So he basically cut these three shows together to make 26 episodes. And then he had to write, you know, scripts to make sense of all this stuff and make a show out of it, which he did. And, you know, it's amazing what you can do when you're under pressure and there's a deadline looming over your head. But he did it, and we all, you know, we all were working very hard to get in there and do it. And we all played several characters, and, you know, and we got it done. And you know, I kind of forgot about it until 10 years later when they had this Robotech convention and they invited me, and I had kind of forgotten that I was even in the show. And I said, did I do that show? They said, yeah, you played Ben Dixon, Lunk, and Grill. I said, I did. They said, yes. And they sent me some, you know, some tapes of the show. And I said, oh, yeah, yeah, I remember. And then I went to the convention, and they were treating us like the Beatles. It was unbelievable. And I said, oh, my God, this is unbelievable. So, you know, and it's kind of a funny story, because later on, they brought me in to audition for Vince Grant. And I went in and auditioned for that. And it was Sue Blue at the time who was directing the audition. And she said to me, oh, that sounds great. You sound better than when you did it before. I said, I did it before? She said, yeah, you did it before in a show called The Sentinels. I said, I did? And so, you know, it was, you know, it was just because you have to realize I've done over 500 characters. And I don't always remember, you know, every single character that I do, especially if it was a while ago. But now, you know, now I remember those shows, of course, because they're kind of iconic shows, especially Robotech. So, you know, and I co-directed Shadow Chronicles, which was the movie, and I'm hoping we'll do more of that stuff. You know, they keep Harmony Gold keeps promising us that they're going to do more Robotech, and I hope they do. And I think, you know, the fans love it; they would love to see more of this stuff. They're waiting right now for the live action version to be done. I guess Sony has the rights now, and they're hopefully going to make a live action version of Robotech. And as soon as they do that, then we'll go back to making the cartoon. So I hope that happens soon.
That's just amazing story to hear that story, because for me, Robotech was a show that really introduced me to anime. And let me ask you this, because Robotech was
introduced a lot of people to anime. Yeah.
Robotech was so unique in the aspect of the emotional power it had for at the time, when people would think, oh, it's just a cartoon. But here you have characters such as Ben Dixon who actually get killed during the show. What was that like for you at that experience? And you're like, I'm reading an animation character who's getting killed. And in Ben Dixon's case, it was a rather violent death.
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, when we did that, that was unheard of. You never have a cartoon character die in a show. That was like, nobody would even imagine that would happen. So when I went in to read that script that day, nobody told me that my character was going to die. And I'm reading the script and go, wait a minute, my character gets killed. I mean, it was like, it was shocking. And nobody told me, and I was kind of pissed at them that they didn't tell me. And then, you know, like a week or two later, they called me in and said, hey, we got this other character. His name's Lunk. Would you come in and play him? I said, sure, I'll play him. So you know, at least I got to be back in the series. And I was Grell, one of the bad guys in it also. So, you know, I got to stay with the show, which was nice. And, you know, but what you're saying is very true, because back in those times, you would never see a cartoon character getting killed. And that was like kind of unheard of. And, you know, it was very shocking, especially to the audience, to see that these characters were getting killed. You know, you would see it in, you know, the live action stuff, but not in cartoons. You would never see that. So I think, you know, part of it is, I think part of the popularity of anime in general is that they're, you know, in many ways, they're not afraid to be more realistic with certain things. In many ways, they ask these questions that are difficult to answer. And, you know, I think they expand upon a lot of the stuff that we do in America, because most of the stuff we do is very formulaic. And I think they kind of push the envelope a lot on their stuff. And I think that's why like Ghost in the Shell is so popular, because it's, you know, it's mentally stimulating. It's not, you're not just watching a show and passing time. They're making you think about certain things. And I think that's, you know, that's really interesting to a lot of people.
You think about what Carl was doing back then. I mean, that was this clever. I mean, yes, it came from, I suppose, the Japanese versions originally, but at the time, Masters of the Universe was popular, you know, it was early 80s, and a lot of that stuff, when you think about it, they'd have an episode, and at the end, they'd have their little message for the kids, you know, don't run across the road, don't do this, you know, talking down to the kids.
Yeah.
And I think with Ben Dixon and Roy Fokker's death as well, those are hard things for kids to watch, but it taught you about life without talking down to you, and I think that's what was so special about that and Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. That's a very good point. Yeah, it was very unusual, you know, to have something like that in there. So yeah, and it was great, you know, and it made it very unique and it made it really really stand out. I watched some of that stuff growing up, you know, like Gigantor, which I wound up doing the scripts for the new one on, and then I watched Speed Racer, which I wound up voicing Racer X on the new one. And, you know, a lot of these shows I grew up watching as a kid, I got to actually work on, you know, later on. Peabody and Sherman, for example. I used to watch that all the time as a kid. I got to recently do, I played Julius Caesar on one episode of Peabody and Sherman and got to work with Chris Parnell, who's wonderful. And, you know, it's really, you know, to me, that's kind of a, you know, the fun thing too, because I'm like you guys. I geek out at some of this stuff, and I'm a fan of a lot of this stuff. And then when I get to work with, you know, people that I respect and that I looked up to, or that I watched as a kid, you know, it's really it's really a joy for me as well.
Now what one of the things that I wonder too, especially as a voice actor, where you're having to match your emotions and your feelings to a character that's already on screen, you're not necessarily acting that out yourself in the way that you kind of got to match what's going on the screen. What is that like?
Well, you're talking about dubbing, and dubbing is when you're replacing the dialogue of another show that's already basically been done. It's in the can, and you're basically having to replace the dialogue with English. And hopefully you have a good director like me who can see sync. And, you know, who knows how to write adaptations, and so that when it's done, it actually looks like they're speaking English and not like some chop socky piece of swill that a lot of them look like. But no, it's very difficult because, you know, it's you're not only acting, and you're not only trying to make it sound natural and real and conversational, but you're also trying to fit it into lip sync. So it's a much more difficult process than doing just voice acting, which we do on games and original animation, where we just go in and we do the character, and then they animate to the dialogue tracks. So it's a lot easier, but that pays a lot more than dubbing. Dubbing pays a lot less for some reason, and I've never been able to figure that out, because dubbing is a lot more difficult to do than voice acting, and a lot of really great voice actors cannot dub to save their lives. They're terrible at it. So, you know, it's a very tough skill, and it's very few people can do it well. And, you know, it's a very, very tough, tough thing to do correctly.
I can imagine. Now, I have to bring up, because it's one of my all-time favorite animes, and it ties in very much with Robotech. You did Macross Plus.
Yes.
Which was still to this day one of my all-time favorites. And I find it so interesting because it's one of the few Macross licensed items that has made it here to the States, considering the whole licensing controversy and everything like that. But you did that show with Bryan Cranston.
I did.
What was that whole experience like? Because you both were amazing in that.
Oh, thank you. Well, Bryan and I are good friends, you know, and Ellen and he and I, we kind of, you know, we grew up together in this business, and, you know, Bryan's done phenomenally well. He's an incredible actor, and, he's terrific. And it was great working with him on that. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I heard he's going to be doing Zordon on, Power Rangers now, the movie, which is really ridiculous, but anyway, you know, we grew up doing a lot of that stuff together. And, you know, when he was starting out, he did a lot of voice stuff and did some anime stuff, just like all of us, you know. But, you know, he really took off, and he's just doing great. But yeah, and it was great doing it with him, and that's a great movie. People really enjoy that movie a lot. It comes up a lot, so it's nice to be part of that. And I was very fortunate. I got to work on some great projects, and I have to tip my hat to Kevin Seymour, who brought me into Ghost in the Shell originally to audition for the movie. But he also cast me in things like Macross Plus and some of these other projects that were terrific shows. Ninja Scroll was another one that he cast me in, and a lot of these great classic anime movies and series. So thanks to him, I got to do a lot of this stuff. And I've been I've been doing this stuff for over 30 years now. It's a lot, and I'm still doing a lot of great new shows. And I'm working on Durarar and Sword Art Online and Seven Deadly Sins and Hunter x Hunter. A lot of these new shows that we're doing, Bleach, Naruto, all these new shows, and I'm still doing it. So that's kind of crazy, Every once in a while, they just called me in to do a trying to think of what the name of the show is. It was so long ago. Oh, Digimon. They just called me in to do a Digimon game. I'm going, are they still doing this stuff? It's like, yeah. So, and every once in a while they'll call me in to do something on Bleach, and I'm going, is this still on the air? It's like, yeah. So it's just fun. We get to do this stuff. One of the fun ones that was actually not an anime, but was made like an anime, which we did, it was original animation, was Legend of Korra. And that was really great fun to be involved in that. And what a great cast we had. We had, incredible people like J.K. Simmons and, just amazing people on that, Mindy Sterling, and David Faustino and Janet Varney, and just all these really great, great people. So that was a blast to be part of that.
Yeah, no, that was a very popular series. I know I have several friends who just love that series, and the spinoff out of Avatar and everything. That series was very well done.
It's funny. I was we were recording that one day, and I'm in the booth, and we would record it like a radio show, and they'd had they have the actors in there, and we'd be reading off of each other, which is really a wonderful way to work, because when we do the dubbing or we do games, we generally just go in one at a time and do our lines, and you're not really talking to anyone, so you have to kind of imagine what they sound like and what they're going to say, and hopefully the whole thing will track and make sense when you're done. But we were in this big booth at Nickelodeon recording the show, and I'm looking around, and I'm seeing J.K. Simmons, and I'm seeing all these incredible people, and I'm just like geeking out on them, And then all of a sudden they stop the session, and the producers come on the talkback, and they say, "Hey, Richard, you were Bateau in Ghost in the Shell, weren't you?" And I said, "Yeah." And they said, "We love that show." And they're like geeking out about me being Bateau. And I thought, it's so bizarre, it's just hilarious. They're geeking out on me, I'm geeking out on them. So it was a lot of geeking going on.
Well, and you bring up Bateau. I would be failing if I didn't mention, when you took on that role and you saw that movie for the first time, did you have any idea that role would be what it is today?
No, I didn't. I immediately loved the movie. The first movie was awesome, and I thought that was a great movie. And I actually thought at the time they should make a live-action version of this. And I don't know what they're going to do. They are making a live-action version of Ghost in the Shell right now with Scarlett Johansson. And I don't know what that's going to look like or how it's going to come out. And I don't know what the plot is on that particular movie. But I thought that the movie looked so real at the time that they could just jump in to do a live action version of that movie, and it would be every bit as entertaining as the animated thing was. But it was a great series. I love the character, and it was a great fit for me. It really was, and I love doing him. And thankfully, I'm still doing him. I just did him last week in First Assault, the game that's online, the Ghost in the Shell game, and it was such a pleasure to go back. And it's like it's like an old friend, And I love playing Bateau, and any chance I get to play him again, I would love it.
And I loved him in Ghost in the Shell 2, Innocence, which is really Bateau's movie. And what you did with the character in that really explored everything that you could possibly think would happen with this character, which is, you know, very much a rock, very much a powerful and, if anything, the hardline of Section 9. But you really gave it a sense of charisma and personality unlike ever before.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I was very fortunate. Once again, you know, be careful what you wish for because it just might happen. I found out that they were doing this particular film, and I'd done several. I did a couple of seasons of Gitz, and I'd done a couple of movies for two, three movies for them, and some games. And then when this thing came out, for some reason, I found out that DreamWorks owned the rights to it, and that the original team was not going to work on it. And I was trying to find out how I could be involved, and you know, because I thought, you know, if DreamWorks has it, they're going to make Johnny Depp Bato or something like that, you know, and they'll cock it all up. So, you know what I mean? So I and even if they did that, I just wanted to at least you know, write and direct it because you know, I have a lot of experience with this, and unfortunately, the big studios really don't do a lot of this kind of stuff. And the guys that they put on it are they're high priced sound guys, but they don't really, you know, they're not really sync oriented, and it's not really their forte to do this stuff. So I wanted to get involved with it, and I tried to get a hold of the woman at DreamWorks who was in charge of the project. And then DreamWorks released it with the terrible subtitles, and it was awful. And I kind of gave up, and I went to a convention in London, and I was approached by Manga UK, and they wanted a dub of it, and they wanted me to play Bateau, and they wanted me to, you know, bring back the original cast, and they wanted me to write and direct it. So it all worked out great, and it, you know, it turned out great. And it was the one time I actually got to play Bateau the way I really wanted to play him, because, you know, I'm always being directed by other directors, and, you know, even though, you know, like Kevin was a good director, but I didn't always agree with him. And I'm, you know, the same thing with these other games and things, you know, you don't, sometimes you don't always agree with the director, but you have to kind of defer to them because they're the director. So it was kind of nice to be able to direct him and to write the show. And I actually put in a little bit of humor, to break it up because it was kind of a dry movie and play Bateau the way I really wanted to play him. So that was really fun. And then the ironic part was 5 years after that, I was approached by Bandai to do, you know, another version of the same movie that they wanted to, now they wanted to release, you know, this, this movie and redub it again with the Gitz cast. So we did it again, and I played Bateau again with a different script and a different director and different team. And it was kind of surreal, to tell you the truth. And, you know, and now I hear that Funimation has got the rights to it, and they're going to be releasing it, re-releasing it soon. And I'm curious to know if they're going to be re-releasing the UK version that I did, the Australian UK version, or if they're going to be doing the, you know, the Bandai version that we did for the States. So I'll be curious to see which one they're going to release.
Well, I remember when that you did the version from Manga UK, because I was fortunate enough to have a friend living overseas who sent that to me, and I, to this day I tell him I owe him my life, because that script was amazing. The script and everything with that was so amazing, because I had seen that original DreamWorks dub in a movie theater here in the States, and I was just like, what did I just see?
Yeah, well, the movie's very convoluted in many ways, for lack of another word, and you know, it's hard to follow unless you have, and that was a real chore too, because a lot of the movie is written in, you know, it's written in sayings and you know, epithets and that sort of thing, and religious sayings and things like that, and I had to try to make that stuff sound conversational and real and work it in the lip sync, and it was very challenging. I got to tell you, very challenging. And then, you know, Alan was talking about earlier about how he liked the way I played the character, which I appreciate very much. Thank you for that compliment. But also, he was actually very different in this movie, because, you know, usually he's just the tough as nailed guy and goes in and has a little bit of a sense of humor, but he's, you know, this one he was kind of lost a little bit, because the major had disappeared. And my feeling is he's always been in love with the major. And he was kind of broken up about that. And it was almost like Bateau and Togusa kind of changed places, because Bateau was the one that was, you know, asking all the philosophical questions and all that sort of thing instead of Togusa. And it was just, it was a very different kind of character. And I almost felt like I wanted to change it a little bit back to kind of the tough guy that he was. But, you know, I had a long, long talk with Crispin Freeman about this when we did it. And, you know, and the bottom line is basically when you're dubbing and you're adapting and directing someone else's movie, you have to stay true to what that guy created and try to make it as close to that, because it's not your movie, it's their movie, you know? So we did that and we tried to stay as close to the original as we could. And, but it was very, very challenging and very, it was one of the toughest things I've ever had to adapt. That's for sure.
I can only imagine. And just to give you the heads up, as far as the live action film goes, everything that I've heard is that it looks like they're going to try to do the Laughing Man's story arc.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So now
either way, I'm screwed, so I don't care.
Yeah. Now, now I've noticed too, you're working on, you also been working on another classic anime series recently where you've been doing a voice work for the current Gundam show.
Gundam Unicorn, is that the one you're talking about?
Unicorn. I saw on your IMDb Iron that you were doing Iron-Blooded Orphans.
Yes, yes. But I don't know much about the show, to tell you the truth. I just kind of, I'm not really, I've gone in and I've done some stuff on it, but I don't really even know what I did on it, to tell you the truth.
Oh, and that kind of my next question, you had referred to this back when you were talking about initially not forgetting that you had worked on Robotech. I would think at a point it just all runs together.
Well, you know, I hate to say it, but it kind of does, unless there's something really unique about the character. You know, I was working at Warner Brothers yesterday, recording on a game, and we all went out to lunch afterwards, the developers and the director and I, and we're talking, and the developer was telling me, he goes, oh, my kids love that show you're in. I said, what show I'm in? And he goes, we watch it all the time. It's Padma Inverted. And I don't know if you guys have heard about that or not.
I have heard of that show.
And I guess he shows it to his, and it, you know, it's like when he first said it, I had no recollection of it whatsoever. When he started describing it to me, I said, oh yeah, yeah, I remember that show now. Yeah, it's actually a very interesting show. So it was, you know, I mean, that's kind of the thing you have to remember. It's, you know, I work almost every day on something. And, you know, I've done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of characters and shows and games and anime series. And it's like, you know, after a while, it is hard to keep track of everything and know what you're doing. Cause you go in and you do your little part of it. Obviously, if I'm directing something or if it's something that's really, you know, unique or, really stands out somehow, I'll remember that, you know, better, but it's just very difficult to remember everything that I'm associated with.
Now, I want to go back to Robotech for a moment for you, because, and Adam had brought it up, talking about what a unique situation Robotech was.
Yeah.
You look back now on it, and you see how popular it has remained through all of these years.
Yeah.
What's it feel like to be involved in something like that just has maintained this popularity for this long?
Oh, it's great. I mean, we last year we did a special appearance at a convention, and we had about 9 or 10 of the original actors there, and people just went, you know, batshit over it. It was just, and to this day, and you know, to this very day, people are still excited about it. And I have people coming up to me all the time at conventions and tell me that they joined the military because of Robotech, and you know, all this stuff. And it's just like, you go, wow, you know, you're in a cartoon show, and it's, you know, it really affects somebody's life. It's kind of, it's interesting, you know?
Well, you know, what it comes down to is like, it's almost like for me, when I look back at Robotech, and that's not just in nostalgia. If I looked at it, from the outset, I think the work that was done on from, you know, story to voice to, you know, its original versions, Macross, Southern Cross, all that. I think what really to me is that I look at it something that, Star Trek, to some extent, has failed to cover is that it's about life, yeah. But it's also about a journey. But at the same time, you know, they're trying to show basically a mirror to what we see in life, and you know, extrapolate that in a science fiction setting.
Yes,
and it's done so bang on perfect. That's why I think it's resonated better than any science fiction, whether it's anime or not. And that's why you guys have done such amazing work on it, is because it's lasted.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's, I have to give most of the credit for Robotech to Carl Masek, who really kind of came up with the concept and put it all together. And actually, listen, Carl, he's responsible for starting a lot of us in the business and, putting us in a lot of us together. And I'm still friends with all the people I worked on Robotech. I know all of them, and most of them are still working voice actors today. And we bump into each other all the time. And, we're all still around. We're all still doing this work. So we have him to thank for that.
Well, and for me, one of the things too, especially with Robotech, from the voice actors who I have talked to that have been into it and stuff, is that you all have such a love for it. And I get the feeling that if they said, okay, we're finally doing it, we're finally coming out with more, you would all jump on board of it, on board as fast as you possibly could.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I co-directed the Shadow Chronicles thing that they did, and that was the last one they did. And they had plans to do a lot more stuff. And for some reason, they have some proviso in their contract with the movie companies that they can't do anything until the live action thing comes out. So I'm disappointed that they agreed to that. And it doesn't make any sense to me, because I know, like, for example, the Transformers stuff, they continue to make the animation stuff during the movies, the live action movies, and they help each other. They work hand in hand and get everybody excited about both, both venues. So I don't see the point in doing that, but that's what they did. So, we're kind of stuck with that, and we have to kind of wait until they're done with that. And hopefully we can jump in I know they've got, a couple, 2-3 more movies in mind, and maybe some other series stuff that they're thinking about doing. So I hope we do get to it before it's too late. They waited a good 20 years before they came out with the movie, after the series went off. And it's, the fans are impatient. They don't want to wait that long. You know what I mean?
Well, I know for me, because I remember when Sentinels came, when they put out the cut of Sentinels, when it had been started and they couldn't finish it, but they wanted to put out what they had done. And then when you said when Shadow Chronicles came out, and what I thought was so unique about Shadow Chronicles was Funimation's involvement with that.
Yeah. Well, they have a great distribution arm. So, and they specialize in anime. So, they're well suited to do that. The thing that amazed me about Shadow Chronicles was how large all the girls' breasts were. So that was kind of...
One of the greatest things, though, is that we get to see you almost like the captain of the Enterprise. I mean, that's what's so great. I mean, it's Captain Kirk in Robotech. It's so well done. And the fact that, I just want to see that ship and you lead that ship into... More adventures.
Me too. And I got to tell you, it's really fun to be the captain of your own starship. It was unbelievable. And I had such a blast working on that project. And, they were telling me that, the ideas for the next movies, and he's going to figure very prominently in the next films that they're going to be doing. So I'm really looking forward to it. And I hope to have, I hope they, I think if they're smart, they'll really jump on this and really start getting to work on this thing. Because, like I say, everywhere I go, people always say, "When's there going to be more Robotech?" And where's it? People love the show and they want to see more stuff. And it's, I think they're just really dropping the ball by not doing anything with it.
Well, I agree.
Yeah, I agree completely. I brought up the point. For me with Robotech, it's always felt like they just start getting started on something new and get just enough to get everybody excited. And then some development happens and it's just like everything comes to a halt. And I think speaking as a fan of Robotech and for a lot of the fans, I think that's where our frustration is we get something started and we get excited. And then like you said, the live action movie holding things up. And I got to think, especially for you as a voice actor and being so involved with that particular property, it's got to be incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, it is. Thankfully, I have a bazillion other projects that I'm on, so I don't have to I don't have to dwell on that, but yeah, it is frustrating for me. You know, I feel like saying, you know, give it to me, I'll run with it. You know, I'll take it over and promote the hell out of it and do all. You know, they have their own way of doing things, and it's their baby, and they can do with what they want with it. But I just think, you know, had they kind of promoted it and continued, you know, cranking out stuff to this day, I think they would be every bit as big as Transformers, if not bigger, you know.
Totally agree. And I just want to put this out there to the listeners. This is something that due to the podcast we're on, Phantom Podcast Network, and they cover the Highlander series of films and franchise. Yeah. One of the characters I've always wanted to see you play, if they do a long animated series, I mean, I know they've done anime of this in the past, from the creator of Ninja Scroll, by the way. Oh. I would love to see you voice the character, the Kurgan, from the Highlander, if they ever do that as an animated.
Well, I'd be happy to do it. I'm not familiar with the character, but I'd be happy to do it. It sounds very cool, actually.
Our friend Norman just lost his mind right about now.
Big fan.
Now, I have to ask, is there a project that you may have just missed out on that you really wish is like, oh, to do that would have been amazing? Or if you could go back and say, I just wish I had a chance at this character.
I would love to, you mentioned I'm a huge James Bond fan. I'd love to do something with James Bond, or, you know, if they did an animated thing or whatever, you know, do Bond or a villain or anything to be involved with something of that franchise. I also would love to, at some point, do Batman. I'd love to do the voice of Batman. And I could actually probably do Batman and Joker in the same movie, and, you know, they would sound completely different. So...
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, it would be fun. But, you know, honestly, I can't complain. I can't really say, oh, I wish I had done this or wish I had done that, because I've been really, really fortunate. And I've been, you know, given a lot of wonderful parts over the years that, you know, I've really kind of stretched me and pushed me. And it's just been kind of wonderful. You know, I get to do a lot of characters in my normal voice, which I play a lot of different characters with this voice, but I also get to play a lot of characters that don't sound anything like me, which are a lot of fun. And then when people find out it was me, they kind of freak out and they go, oh my God, I had no idea that was you. And that's always kind of fun for me too, because then you're just, you know, you're playing a character that's completely different. And I think that's the fun thing about the voice thing versus the on-camera thing, because when you do on camera, you're kind of relegated to the way you appear. But when you do the voice stuff, you can be any character that you can create vocally. And I just think that there's a lot of fun to it. And in many ways, there's more creativity to it, you know?
Well, that brings me, and I have to bring this up. One of your on camera roles that I always got a real kick out of was when you were on Warehouse 13 as Thomas Edison.
Oh yeah. Tallest Thomas Edison in the world. Yeah, that was a lot of fun, and I got to work with Yuri Lowenthal on that, and Todd Haberkorn. We had a blast doing that, and that was really fun. And then they kind of animated it after the fact, which looks really kind of really cool. So yeah, that was a very fun gig, actually. I really enjoyed doing that. But you know, you never know. And I get to work on a lot of stuff, you know, and then a lot of the new movies that, Deadpool, I did some voice work on that, and I did the efforts for Colossus in the movie. And, I just worked on, World of Warcraft movie that just came out. I did a bunch of voice work on that, and then I just worked on the game again and did some stuff on that as well. So, you know, and Planet of the Apes, I was the big ape. Yeah, big ape. I was the ape in the first one. I played Buck, and then I did some stuff in the second one. So, yeah, so I get to do a lot of the voice stuff in the big movies too, and it's fun, you know. It's really a lot of fun.
For the people out there that, you know, probably grew up with your work and stuff like that, I think, you know, a lot of them don't appreciate the fact that you're so multi-skilled and that you've got, you know, obviously the live action work that you do as well. And, you know, I've known for years because back when this would have been early 80s, I can remember coming home from school after watching Robotech in the morning, going to school, coming home, and then my mum was home watching might have been Days of Our Lives. I think it was.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I hear the voice, and I'm like, Ben Dixon? Face the TV, and there you are. And I think you're playing a bad guy in that.
Well, I was in every soap opera there was, and I always played the bad guy. So, but that's amazing that you recognize my voice from that. That's incredible.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and there was a you know, I mean, there's been films. I mean, you've worked with Chevy Chase, you've worked with everybody, you know, and that's
Sam Neill.
Yeah, I mean,
I actually, you know, in Broken Spirits, we have some Australians in there. We have Andy McPhee. Do you know who he is?
I do.
Yeah, the guy from what is it? The thing with the motorcycle gang. What is it called?
Oh, I'm trying to think now.
Oh, I see. I can barely remember my titles. I can't remember everybody else's. you know, what is it? The thing that Katie Seagull's in.
Oh, Sons of Anarchy.
Sons of Anarchy. Yeah, he was in Sons of Anarchy, and he's in our movie. He plays Oldman in our movie. And then he brought some really gorgeous women from Australia who played extras in our movie who go to the sweat lodge with me, and that was kind of fun. I had a hard time remembering my lines sometimes because these girls are beautiful. But
we got to get you out here to make a film.
Oh, I would love it, man. I would absolutely love it. Are you kidding? I would love it. I love Australia. I would love to go back. Any excuse. It's gorgeous there. It really is.
And it's so laid back, and that's what we like. I think, you know, that's the thing is people appreciate that when they come out here. There's that, you know, there's no mucking around. Everyone's blunt as a butter knife to, you know, how life is, yeah. And everyone appreciates each other, and that's what I love about it.
Yeah, me too. It's great. It's great. And the people like you, Alan, are wonderful.
Oh, thank you very much, mate. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's great. We loved it. We had such a great time last time we were there for Supernova, and we just had a great, great time. And I hope we return soon. I would love to, believe me.
Oh, we'll make it happen, mate, for sure. We'll try our best.
All right, good. Daniel.
And in the meantime, anytime you want to come back to my area in Florida, you're always more than welcome.
Well, you know, I do a lot of cons in Florida. Actually, I'm over there quite a bit. I do You said you're near Tampa?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what we. I don't know. Is MetroCon near you guys or
Metro? Yeah, MetroCon is right in Tampa. We also have MegaCon in Orlando that's near us.
Yeah, I do a bunch. It's like every year I'm in Florida at least two or three times a year doing some convention. So yeah, I'm always over there. But yeah, it's fun, you know, and Florida's a great, great place to go. So yeah, you know, we enjoy it. We really enjoy doing the conventions. I'll tell you something. It's fun for us because, you know, we're stuck in dark booths all day and, you know, we don't know, do people like what we do? Do they not like what, you know, we don't know. And then we go to these conventions and they just really, really enjoy our work, and they're really, you know, into it and tuned into what we're doing, and it's a pleasure to meet these you know, the people that really enjoy the stuff that you do, and it's really kind of fun. It's really a lot of fun for us as well.
Well, and it's always great to see you guys at a comic because I have yet to meet a voice actor who isn't appreciative of the fan support, and
yeah,
you guys are across the board. Everyone has always been so friendly and genuine with the fans, and it's so nice to see.
Yeah, that's great. That's really great. And unfortunately, I hate to say it, but you can't always say that about the on-camera actors.
But on that note, Mr. Epcar, I want to thank you for joining us. It's been a real pleasure having you on. I know you have a very busy schedule, and for you to take the time to join us today has been an absolute pleasure.
It's my pleasure. And I just, before we go, I want to just plug a couple of quick conventions that I will be at, just so people know. This August 19th through the 21st, I'll be at MatsuriCon, which is in Columbus, Ohio. And then in September 2nd through the 4th, albeit Nandiscon, which is in Denver, Colorado, my hometown, actually. That's where I grew up. And I think that's about it for the year. I think we have one more before the end of the year, and that's going to be December 29th through January 1st, Ichiban Con, which is in Concord, North Carolina. So we've got a few of those conventions. I say we, it's my wife and myself, Ellen Stern and I will be there, and except for Matsuri Con, that's just going to be me by myself, which is always trouble and scary. I'm lucky my wife lets me off of my electronic leash to go to these things. So
and speaking of electronics, where on social media can people find you?
Well, first of all, if you want to know where I'm going to be at a convention, the best place is to go to richardepcar.com, which is my website, richardepcar.com. And you can see all of the conventions I'm going to be appearing at, and you can see some of the things that I'm working on. And you can also catch me on Facebook. I have two pages, Richard Epcar and Richard Epcar 2, and also my fan page, Richard Epcar. And you can also catch me on Twitter, Richard Epcar on Twitter. So, yeah, follow me, and we'll talk about some new stuff that I'm working on. I've got a boatload of stuff that I'm working on right now. Ellen and I just did the new Loop on the Third series, the Blue Jacket series, and I played Jigen again in that, which was a thrill to come back to that character after 12 years. It was really wonderful to play him again, and we're looking forward to the release of that series. And then I've got a boatload of games that I'm working on right now that unfortunately I cannot talk about, but hopefully I'll be able to talk about soon, and very, very exciting characters that I'm working on. So we're really excited about that.
That's great. And while I have you here, sir, I also want to extend an invite to you. As soon we will be doing a fandom flashback on James Bond, knowing what a huge Bond fan you are, we would love to have you back for an in-depth discussion of
James Bond. I would love that. James Absolutely. Bond. It's one of my favorite subjects.
So, Alan, do you have anything you'd like to say before we close out of here today?
First of all, thanks to all the listeners that have chimed in to listen to us today, and a big thanks to my dear friend and pal for joining us today here. All I can say is that what Richard's done for not just fandom in general, but what he does for fans every Tommy Gas conventions is goes out of his way to make you feel welcome and to, you know, give a little bit of what it is like to be a voice actor to the fans out there. And I really appreciate that, and I know the fans do too. And big thanks to you for coming on the show today.
Well, thank you, Alan. That was very sweet. I appreciate that. And listen, it's my pleasure, believe me. It's really my pleasure. I have as much fun as the fans do, so I enjoyed it just as much.
Well, and I have to echo Alan's sentiments. When this developed and to have you on this show, I have been listening to you for years on some of my favorite anime and video games. And like I said, it's an absolute honor to have you on the show. And I can't thank you again for being here and talking with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And like I said, the invite is extended for James Bond, and you're welcome back anytime if you have something you would care to promote or just want to come and chew the fat with us.
Well, thank you. Yeah, let me know when the Bond thing is. That's fun. I would love to do that. You have absolutely. To get on that too, because he's a huge Bond fan too.
Oh, he knows he can just walk in on any show at any time.
Well, all right, you guys. Well, have a wonderful day. It was good chatting with you guys. And I hope to talk to you soon.
Take care, Mr. Epcar. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you. My pleasure. All the best. Bye.